Welcome to the IconCast, a podcast about the business of enterprise technology. How to buy it, how to sell it, and how to use it. I'm your host, Justin Warren. On this show, we talk with Jeff Barr, who's the Senior Director of Product Solutions and Technical Marketing as part of Dell Networking. We talk about the way the networking world is changing pretty dramatically towards a more open form of managing software.
It embraces much of what has been happening in open networking, and it is in itself entirely open software.
And we discuss how some very large organizations are embracing the way that Google develops applications rather than the traditional monolithic way that they may have done it in the past.
Then they try to figure out how do I develop an app, and I think they pretty quickly come to the realization that I can't make that a scale-up architecture where I just have to running that on like a Cray supercomputer.
And we look at the implications of a world where customers are looking beyond traditional switch vendors for somewhere they could get some networking gear from.
Isn't ultimately what the customer's looking for. In this aggregated world, people need to live at the level that they live at, and we are a server storage and networking supplier.
All that coming up next on the IconCast. This episode of the IconCast is brought to you by Pivot9 Consulting. You can check them out at pivot9.com. If you'd like to become a sponsor of the IconCast, get in touch with us by emailing us at IconCast@IconMagic.com. This interview was recorded on Tuesday, the 19th of January 2016. At least that was the time here in Melbourne when we recorded it. This was just before the official announcement went out about Dell's new switch operating system called Operating System 10. Now, this is a bit of software that can run on, well, theoretically anybody's hardware, but it'll probably run on Dell hardware to start with. And the magic part that allows it to do that is called the Switch Abstraction Interface, or SAI, as it's sometimes referred to. Now, this is part of the Open Compute project, which you may remember was started by Facebook and a bunch of others. The Switch Abstraction Interface was something that Dell came up with the help of Microsoft and Broadcom, and I think Mellanox and a couple of others. I'll put a link to the relevant web pages in the podcast notes so that you can go and check that out in more detail if you want to. Now, the thing about this is that it essentially abstracts away all of the hardware stuff so that you can then write software that talks to switching silicon, so the actual thing that you plug your network cable in. You can now write software that talks to a GigE interface, but it doesn't really matter who makes that GigE interface, because the abstraction interface makes them all look the same. Now, this is in stark contrast to the proprietary vendors like Cisco and Juniper, who have custom silicon and custom software that are tightly coupled together. When you buy a piece of Cisco hardware, you get the Cisco operating system that drives that hardware and makes it do its thing. The SAI side of the world, though, means that you can have hardware vendors go and build switch hardware that can be talked to using the switch abstraction interface, and then a completely different set of companies can write switching software or networking software that can use hardware that is SAI compliant, and that decouples the two things. Now, that's in stark contrast to the way that the hyperconverged infrastructure folks are doing things, because in that case, you've actually got the software and the hardware coming closer together so that you can get the applications running on CPUs and the storage, and they have all the resources they need right next to each other. But when it comes to talking to other computers, they still need to go across a network. And we have the likes of VMware with its NSX. We have a whole bunch of software-defined networking people who have separated the data plane and the control plane. So there's a lot of activity happening in this area where people are trying to use software to do a lot of the networking side of things and kind of get it away from the hardware a bit. And this abstraction interface makes that process a bit easier to do. And it enables people like Dell, or companies like Dell, to bring out software like OS X. So listen out for that kind of theme running in the background as we discuss what Dell are doing with OS X and open networking in general. So with that note, let's get on with the interview with Jeff Barr from Dell. Thanks for having a chat to me, Jeff. So as you mentioned, you're the Senior Director of Product Solutions and Technical Marketing in Dell Networking, is that right?
Correct.
Cool. And you have this lovely new thing on Dell's Open Networking, which has been released. This is called somewhat confusingly Operating System 10, OS 10. So we have another OS 10 out there, which is good. This one is not the one that runs on Macs. It it runs on Dell hardware. Is that right?
That's correct. Yeah. In the same way that there's multiple iOSs out there in the world, there are multiple OS 10s. This is not OS X. I would say this is OS 10, OS 10. We have had both OS 6 and OS 9 in our offering already. OS 6 is our campus software line. OS 9 is our data center software line. OS 10 is the evolution of that. This is brand new software architected from the ground up. It embraces much of what has been happening in open networking, and it is in itself entirely open software.
Right. So this is designed for the data center.
It's designed initially for pretty advanced large-scale data center operators. Over time, this will be the software base for all of our mid-market data center, campus, and branch. But today, it has a special appeal for the DevOps community. And what's unique in that is, one, they like to see networking tightly aligned with servers and storage. So that has to do with both kind of a software environment, a programmatic environment, and the way in which they want to write applications and the way in which applications get stitched to the network are pretty unique and pretty advanced. And those are things that you can't do today with current networking software the way it's been delivered.
Okay. And it says here just in the press release that the OS X base module is available for free and runs an open unmodified Linux distribution.
Correct.
But then underneath that you have a switch abstraction interface, which is part of the Open Compute project, and that's
correct
for running the extra special modules that come from Dell and potentially others. When I purchase one of these, what do I actually get? Do I install this on my own hardware, or am I buying hardware from Dell?
So you're correct that there's a base package of software, which is probably referred to it as like the system software, and then there's optional packages on top, which could be open source, could be your own applications, they could be applications that Dell offers. And you're correct that the base software is available for free, and it embraces two things, well, three things. As you said, it embraces an open, unmodified Linux kernel. So that's important because then you can easily change that kernel and still have the same capabilities as a switching platform. Many other operating systems today that are networking operating systems use Linux, but in almost all of them, they've modified the Linux kernel for what they need to do.
Mm-hmm.
So this is entirely unmodified Linux, which is important because also if you have servers and storage and you also might be using that same open Linux distribution, you can get alignment there, which you couldn't get with normal networking software the way it is today. So that's the first. The second is, as you were saying, Southbound, it leverages a OCP switch abstraction interface. So this is a published open source specification that allows this base software to be silicon independent, so it can run on any different silicon. Typically what happens with base software that makes it kind of sticky is, one, the modification of the Linux kernel, and two, the fact that it has been modified to work on a specific instantiation of silicon, and in some cases it's custom silicon by a vendor.
Yeah, this is the thing that Facebook famously sort of kicked off a few years back.
OCP is what Facebook kicked off. This SAI was a joint submission by Microsoft and Dell, and actually a few others. And in the back of this release, we have some links to that announcement, so you can see this came out last year at the Open Compute event, but you can see who else was participating in that.
Okay, so it's a related project to that initiative.
Correct. And then what sits on top of that is CPS. CPS is the programmatic interface to this base software. So if you don't want to use any other software from Dell, you would be leveraging the APIs in CPS to connect native Linux apps or third-party apps. And this is where today there's a fair number of customers out there that know exactly how they want to stitch the network together in the data center and are going far to the left, and that's that DevOps community. That software today comes free with our hardware. So this is, you know, we offer support for the system and the base software, but technically speaking, that software could run on other platforms. But that's a test and integration, more of a business type of configuration than a. There's, you had mentioned something earlier. There's nothing sticky. There's no secret Dell stuff underneath any of what's in that base package.
Right. So I could grab this software and put it onto another server of some sort or virtual machine, but it would have limited functionality given that it's designed to run networking gear. So if I don't actually have any network interfaces, like on a switch with 24 ports of GigE, I'm not really going to be able to do a lot with it, unless I was doing something more like routing or being a BGP instance or something.
Yeah, so it would be more how you would end up most likely running a virtual switching or virtual routing application in user space in Linux, and then you would still be able to do some pretty interesting things with CPS. So there's some interesting things even in a non-NPU environment, but today it's primarily for this. So people who have a large number of switches and they really want to be able to get direct access to how they program those switches, and there's an element of investment protection. So if you've written applications, they're easily portable. You're not bound to a certain networking platform or the silicon underneath it, which is a big thing that we're getting from some of the larger customers. That's partly how they want to see this disaggregation kind of work to their benefit.
Hmm. All right. So this really does play into that, people are calling software-defined networking.
100%.
Everything is software-defined because software runs on hardware. And I'm old enough to remember when back in the day we didn't have dedicated devices to do networking. It was just a Unix server that you connected networks and they talked to each other. And then we decided that, hey, wouldn't it be great if we just offloaded this onto a device that did nothing but move packets around? Now we're sort of collapsing back the other way, which is somewhat ironic. Now I noticed that there's a few other brands on some of these slides. We've got Big Switch, Cumulus Networks, and Pluribus Networks. How does that fit in with this OS X operating system?
Yeah,
that
so that was really more as a historical backdrop to show that what open networking ultimately has done is that it's introduced a lot of different vendors, a lot of different business models, and the ability to solve a number of different problems and to disrupt a number of different aspects of the market. So data center in the rack with servers and storage, a lot of interest in how you can align those elements. Pluribus brings an interesting solution around how you stitch multiple racks together and create a fabric. IP Infusion is doing some very interesting things to disrupt the, relatively speaking, kind of high-end IP MPLS offerings that exist around the WAN. So these are things that otherwise you'd be really beholden to a small set of vendors to solve with their hardware and their software. So it's really the backdrop for where the industry is ultimately going to be going, which is not unlike servers. You buy servers and then independently you add software to give it different capabilities and or virtualization capabilities, and you then run workloads, and they typically come from different suppliers, and the suppliers have different business models and have different rates of innovation, and it just doesn't make sense 20 years in. I've also been around for a quite a while, that it just doesn't make sense at this point. Maybe for high-end routers, CRS, T-Series type backbone routers, where there's still a lot of custom silicon and probably not easy for someone else to write software for that level of complexity of a system. But for, single chip top of rack or fabric switches, there's a lot that can be done when you introduce a lot of other software vendors. So that's the backdrop of open networking. We still have a significant customer base that we are continuing to service. So OS X, from that perspective, really, it embraces a lot of what's been going on in open networking. It also is an important thing that we're doing independent of that, as we still develop our own software and develop our own innovations around that.
Right. So it sounds like it's additive rather than it's another option for networking people to add to their systems, rather than being a, hey, this is the brand new hotness, you need to stop using any of these point-to-point.
You're absolutely right. Yeah, no, there's OS 6, for example, on our campus side has a whole slew of both campus and wireless features, security features, ease of use features for a whole different set of use cases. And similarly, our our data center software focuses on a lot of protocols, a lot of capabilities. Today, there's a small, relatively speaking, small subset of very, very advanced operators in data centers that are of a level of scale operationally and technically speaking that they really want to get underneath the hood of the software. And yeah, so that is not your typical networking user today. A lot of that can be satisfied with our current software, our current capabilities, our current ability to integrate features. But there is that other subset that more cloud, more web tech, but that will then ultimately find its way in as kind of blueprints for the mid-market. Some of the things we're seeing now around container-based networking, we're doing this with one of the large Web 2.0 providers. These are things that ultimately will become mainstream requirements as more and more customers integrate containers into their software-defined data centers. So, today it's the kind of high end to the right kind of customer, but that's that tomorrow will really be kind of the mainstream.
Yeah, it'll diffuse down as we've seen with things like hyperconverged processes and storage, and it's the usual way. So these kinds of things, going back in the day, I remember when no one would contemplate putting in an MPLS scenario inside their own set of data centers, because that was carrier grade networking things. You didn't do that yourself. It's not a campus thing. And now we have people who are regularly putting in MPLS networks to do multi-site data center routing. So I can absolutely see it filtering down. Yeah. So this is more or less, I'd hesitate to call it bleeding edge, but this is really that it dovetails in with Dell's strategy of going after the one tier down from the hyperscalers, those managed service providers, the people who are doing things at significant scale, which is where a lot of this stuff gets developed and proven and worked out. And then when we've got, yep, this is how it works really well, this is a great solution for that particular problem, we see that getting standardized and templated, and then that starts to go into your large scale enterprises and makes its way into the mid-market. Okay.
Yeah, 100%. And I would say, today it's large cloud providers, it's financial institutions. There are some universities, but certainly the financial institutions today are at that point where their data centers are pretty strategic and what they do there is pretty important. So as a result, they can invest in the IT staff. But I would say, similarly, like yourself, I mean, I've been in this industry for a long time. I was at Cisco for a long time. There was, for the longest time, the suppliers have really been providing the blueprints for the customers. And there's been a big shift over the last 5 years, maybe longer, maybe a little less. But really now, the learnings come from the Google, Facebook, Amazon, kind of Microsoft crowd in terms of how they write applications, how they've evolved their operations. That ultimately, the learnings, just as you were saying, they're coming more and more from the customers and from the community. And it's, as our job, really just how quickly can you supply the technology, the building blocks, and really align to that. But that's a pretty significant shift that I've observed, and it feels pretty real.
Yeah, that's you bring up an interesting point in there. I mean, we've, for quite a few years now, we've been hearing about how wonderful Facebook and Google and Microsoft Azure and everything. These are hyperscale cloud providers. Most enterprises don't look anything like that, but some of the technologies are being developed and brought in-house. You mentioned finance organizations, and that's interesting to me. I've done some consulting for finance and banking type companies. What is it about their networks that lends itself to this kind of software-based operating system for their networks?
Yeah, so it could be that it's more the retail side, which has a cloud aspect. The front end of everything that we're now doing with smartphones, much of that, I mean, they're still ultimately bringing all of those connections back to their data center. So they're managing high volumes. It's a distributed set of data centers around the world. There's a response time aspect to it because people are trying to do either real-time quotes or trades.
Oh, okay,
Because it's more of an iOS, Android type of application, how many times do you get a new, I don't know if you do anything financially on your phones, but I get a fair number of upgrades of that application, once a month, maybe, or it happens pretty frequently. So that's all the rate at which they're writing up, the updating things in the back end, there's that same level of velocity. So that's where we first started to get people who wanted to start to really get to more of a Linux operating system, Linux cockpit experience for the switching. And typically because it's a virtualized data center, they've got virtualized switches. So the starting point is really how do I stitch what's going on in my container networking, my virtual switching, to these physical switches that are there. So they've already kind of come up with, they've already presented themselves with a use case and problem that they need to kind of address, that this kind of software is, it's the only other thing, it's the only thing you can really use to be able to consider how you'd solve that.
Yeah, and that's a good point, in that you've got the same retail presence, which has the use case. It behaves very much like search or any of this software as a service type thing that some of the hyperscalers are involved with. So you do have, I remember when one banking organization I worked with, they brought out a mobile app to do, so people could, you know, look at their account balances and so on. They already had internet banking and they'd had it for a while, but as soon as they brought out the app, the volumes of transactions of, you know, people just logging in to see if they've been paid today, just went through the roof. You know, people checking their mobile phone 2-3 times a day because they've got it with them, as distinct from internet banking. And even that was a lot higher than going into a physical branch and or even going to an ATM and you know, putting in some numbers to check your balance. So yeah, so it's interesting that's happening.
Yeah, and I think, you know, so then they try to figure out, how do I develop an app, and I think they pretty quickly come to the realization that I can't make that a scale up architecture where I just have to have them running that on like a Cray supercomputer in the end. You know, so I think that's, they come to the conclusion pretty quickly, like they looked at Google and others, how do I scale this application? And they start to come to, this has to be my own custom written distributed application, so I need a lot of cost-effective servers, which get striped across a lot of racks, which then introduce a lot of top-of-rack switches, and then, boom, they're into, like, what am I going to run on those switches? It's driven by the use case, driven by the application, and yeah.
Absolutely, yeah. And internally, they often have a centralized IT group, or there will be some IT who build that data center, and it's like, internally, it looks a lot like a service provider, because you'll have not just the retail banking app, but you'll have other ones for things like margin lending and mortgages and all of these different lines of business that internally, okay, yeah, I don't have 1,400 lines of business, but I've got enough that it means that changing the way that I do things to look more like a service provider makes a lot more sense than just having that old school monolithic IT.
Yeah, and there's just no way that they can, you know, get in the queue with everyone else to wait for a networking supplier to give a new rev of their software. It's not going to happen.
Yeah.
That is the heart of this release. That's the heart of, you know, the use cases that we highlight. It's some pretty powerful software.
That's a really cool thing to have. But so what is it about, what's the Dell angle on this? Where is Dell aiming to make some money out of this and to take this as something that Dell does that provides that special sauce?
You know, the special sauce on one level, and we are the number two server vendor in the world. We are a growing storage vendor, and networking is a critical and strategic component for how those two come together. And our business is based around solutions that leverage the server storage and networking franchises. There's some software that we add to that, some embedded software like we're talking about here, but it's really that the packaging of those three. A lot of other people that offer those same types of products also are trying to do other things, and those things that, and many times either are present a conflict for the first business or isn't ultimately what the customer's looking for. In this aggregated world, people need to live at the level that they live at, and we are a server storage and networking supplier. Others will develop operating systems, and others will develop virtualization technologies, others will develop workloads. So, I think that's how we see it, and I think we're doing pretty well from that perspective in the market.
It'll be really interesting to see how the market take-up is of OS X. It certainly seems to be positioning itself in the spot where all the action's happening. So I guess now we see how people react once they give it a try and see how it works.
Yeah, you know, I think it's where we've gotten some interest is in this view, this horizontal view in the data center, where you see this as software that can be unified with servers and storage. And I think also the idea that for those that know what they want to do with the switching elements, the ability to have just the system software and not the protocols that come packaged with it is net new, and it's what they want. So in any other situation, while there may be some software out there that has a Linux base or is programmable, you always get their networking protocols, which takes up space and from some people's perspective would be considered bloatware if it's not what they need. You know, I think it definitely highlights another level of choice, and I think that's the part that we get pretty excited about, and yeah, I think it's a good starting point.
Well, very good. And look, Jeff, I hope that it goes well for you. It certainly will be interesting, and I'll be keeping an eye on it. Thank you very much for your time today.
Thank you. Any questions, feel free to reach out to us anytime.
And thank you again to Jeff from Dell for taking the time to have a chat with me about their new open networking product. And that's all for this episode of the EigenCast. If you've enjoyed this episode, please go along to the website, which is eigenmagic.com, and you'll be able to see links to the EigenCast, and you can subscribe to it. You can also search for the EigenCast in iTunes, and we'd be quite happy for you to review us and give us lots of happy stars. That would be lovely. And if just listening to us isn't enough, you want to actually get in touch with us and talk to us, you can. We have a Twitter handle, which is TheEigenCast, or you can talk directly to me, which is at JPWarren on Twitter, or you can email us at eigencast@eigenmagic.com. This episode of the EigenCast was brought to you by Pivot9 Consulting, so thank you very much to them. You can go and check out their website at pivot9.com. And if you'd like to become a sponsor of the EigenCast, get in touch with us via email at eigencast@eigenmagic.com. And until next time, I've been Justin Warren. Thanks for listening. We'll be right back.